This is the Hip Hop African Podcast, a show that features interviews and discussions on African hip hop culture and artists. The show is produced in the Department of African Studies at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or catch us on our website, hiphopafrican.com. So in this episode of the Hip Hop African Podcast, we sat down outside of Vita E Cafe in Accra, Ghana with hip hop artist Manifest. It was after a day of rehearsals and radio promos in preparation for his Manifest Invites event, which took place that weekend. Now, the event was important for several reasons, but one of which was the coming together of Manifest and Sarkodie, representing an end to the feud between the two. We didn't discuss the beef in the interview because on the show, we tend to not really get into who an artist is beefing with or sleeping with or what have you. I only mention the beef now between Manifest and Sarkodie because of its significance within hip-hop culture. So hip-hop beefs are as old as hip-hop, and legendary beefs have often resulted in the involved artists kind of raising the bar in terms of hip-hop lyricism because they often write some of their best songs in response to diss records. So hip-hop culture also benefits when two equally talented giants settle a beef peacefully, which is what happened in this case. And so, you know, video and photos of the two of them on stage kind of went viral after the show. So I definitely wanted to mention that. So in this interview, Manifest, who lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota in the U.S. for several years to attend college, talks about his return to Ghana, as well as his experiences in both the U.S. and Ghana. As an artist whose music reflects Ghanaian, African, and diaspora experiences and culture, Manifest brings an important level of intellectual complexity to hip-hop culture. So when I point these things out in the interview, Manifest says, quote, that he does not want to be an alternative to the mainstream, but an alternative within the mainstream. So in this episode, we'll take a look back, before we begin the interview or play the interview, a little bit to look musically at Manifest's career. So we're going to begin with the song Africa Represent from his 2007 album Manifestations. Then we'll play the first verse from Motion Picture, the song Motion Picture from his 2011 album Immigrant Chronicles Coming to America, and his single God MC, his 2016 single God MC. And then after the interview, we're going to end the show with the song Hand They Go, Hand They Come from his 2016 album Nowhere Cool. The show notes contain links to Manifest social media sites, as well as online stores where you can purchase his music. All right, enjoy. Represent who? Represent what? Represent who? Represent what?
Represent Africa with a spectacular street vernacular.
Represent who? Represent what?
Yo, check this out like this, yo. Yo, who would've knew that this cat from Africa would come to America? Verbally massacre these characters. Never no passenger, I cruise in the driver's seat. Cadillac Hooties, Buick still doing it. Rappers like the ice cream truck, kids pursuing it. Media's confusing it, white boys consuming it. Me, I pick a spoon and scoop a little soul in it. Master B with the flow, yo, there's no limit. No gimmicks, stay on point like John C. Phillips. These arrows from my bow like Riddick. The critics say I spit it so different. Scorpio intense, Ghanaian presence, defining the essence. Ancestors bless us beyond measure. Deliver lyrical treasure like AZ in the golden era. Written off the top on beat or a cappella. Every line, every rhyme relevant forever. In the name of Mandela, Masakela, Makeba. All our traditions and the flavor you can savor. We never gave up. True warriors, vainglorious. It's obvious the gift is upon us.
Represent who? Represent what?
Represent Africa with it. Baku, Minu. 1, 2, 1, 2. Huh. Never worry, January or February. My life's a motion picture, somebody called Tyler Perry. Tell him I got a story embedded in oratory. I'm worth giving a shot to like fourth quarter Robert Ory. It was 1982, mama pushed me out the womb. Was the year after a coup. Same morning, my granddaddy was buried too. So I inherited a name that captured a moment like Kodak beat. I'm a Saturday born, tropical warm, skin tone, darker than Guinness, blessed with a gift of song. Nothing wrong, I was a love child. Even Ashanti bloodlines, born to shine, got the four, porcupine, M. Natural star, raised in a choir with home of war. Dirt, rose, clutter, goddess, working mothers, unemployed brothers. Machetes cutting grass, chances of making it slimmer than the waste of an hourglass.
Watch out, watch out.
I pull up on the feature, screaming hallelujah. Ain't a barracuda smoking Buddha in Fallujah. Clash of the Titans, I dinner with Medusa. Don't turn me into stone, boy, I'm a ruler. They sipping on my ruler, me, I kick it with a cougar. Tonight will be lit, super. Callous, fragilistic, SBL, I'm precocious. These dudes you call cool, atrocious. Don't get intoxicated by these drunk cards. The run on prejudice is a trump card. On my lampard, Charlie, I'm so frank. Give me the blues, who's who, go rank. Don't measure your pen with mine, she pen to mine, and that's in nine. And you wanna be king, get your ass in line. These no be bars, I'm just passing time. Charlie, I did. I just chuck it. Laughing hard till your tears in the bucket. Some of my peers spineless, they are Muppets. Always nodding like a lizard, damn it, I got my. Yeah. What's a king to a god MC? Numero uno, that be me. You know be star, yeah, we'll comment at best. Don't ask me no questions, no comments at best. Tell the fashion police.
So first I want to say thank you, Manifest.
No, thank you. It's good to reconvene after
I know
a couple of
6 years.
Yeah.
All right. So there's just so much I wanted to ask you. So obviously you saw the book, and I think it's your first 3 albums, and they were done. They were the ones you did before you came back to Ghana.
Yeah.
First two. Was it 2 or 3?
I think 2, but with one like mixtape kind of thing. So it was probably 3 at
all
the
right.
time. Yeah.
So now you're back. And I remember when you left, I remember thinking, what? He's leaving. Because you left, One Love left, Crooked left. It was like all these people were leaving. K-9 had gone silent, disappeared. Blitz was like the only one really holding it down on any kind of big level. So I remember thinking, no, he's going to come back. And then, obviously, you made the best choice. Because you came here. And I'm just looking online like, what? Like, it was... in terms of...
We had to turn it up there.
Yeah. So, obviously, you don't regret your decision to come back.
No, I don't.
But I guess I wanted to see... Do your experiences, because another thing in terms of listening to your music, it was almost as if the closer you got to coming back to Ghana, the more Ghana came into your music. And so was that something that was conscious? Like, were you always knowing that, okay, this is the plan, I'm going back home? Or was it just like, I'm going back, I'm ready to go?
I think I might have mentioned this to you when we first met, but I never really meant or to... have stayed in America that long.
Okay.
It wasn't my plan.
Okay.
Life happened.
Okay.
And I took, I guess, the best... I made the best out of the opportunity of living life somewhere else and being able to almost have that space outside of my comfort zone to nurture and grow myself outside of people who knew me.
Okay.
So it was always a logical step to come back.
Okay.
But life had happened. I had a child then, I think, and all that. So it had gotten a bit more complicated, as America tends to let happen to you.
Yes.
So then the pull and the natural progression to come back just started happening again.
Okay.
You know, and I allowed it to. It made sense to me. I didn't see myself in America, and I still knew I could access America. I still thought it was possible.
Yeah.
And I felt like the closer, like you said, the music was changing, the closer I got to my return.
Yeah.
And for me, the closer the music became to who I was comfortable being here, the better it was going to be. So it made sense.
Okay. So given the sound change and the change in terms of lyrics and even in terms of infusing languages, I'm assuming both Manifests are the real Manifest. And so it wasn't like you were, okay, I'm putting on this role because I'm in the States. It was, that was kind of your experience.
Yeah. And the environment tends to inform you because you're speaking to an audience. We're in the business of communication as artists. So if I'm in Minneapolis, I'm in the business of communicating to not just a diaspora of people, but just a whole different group of people. And without, sometimes you're conscious of it, but it does inform you.
Okay.
It does inform you whether you want to believe it or not. And especially when you love the art so much that you want to, yes, you are defiant and you want mm-hmm. to represent, but you also want to speak to. And it does inform you subconsciously to a certain degree. And it did. And I'm happy it did.
Yeah.
But I had to evolve out of that.
Okay. So what would you say is the differences, are the differences in terms of the industry in the States and the industry here?
Man, where do I begin? You see, being able to have had that perspective, I know the good fortune that it is that America has infrastructure.
Mm.
You know, you can have a very accomplished artist here in terms of popularity, in terms of getting shows, getting money in those avenues, and certain basic infrastructure things, having registered to ASCAP, having published, are not taken care of.
Okay.
And because they're doing well in terms of moving and grooving and playing in different places, it's not, they don't pay attention to it. Like coming up as an independent artist in America, just by default, before I even released music, I found out about all these things. I registered, I have ASCAP publishing, I have ASCAP writer, all these things that you take for granted on that side because it functions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a clear infrastructure difference that exists.
Okay.
America, though, is an older industry which does not, as much as there's a lot of disruption and mm-hmm. technology and the internet has helped it, it always tries to control it because the business of music is stronger or has a stronger history. People are not just trying to let you make money outside of the business of it.
Yeah.
Outside of the, you know, the people who have controlled it for the longest. So it is much difficult to cause that disruption and without support, big backing.
Yeah.
It is much more difficult to do that as opposed to a burgeoning scene here, which, as much as music has been loved for ages, whether it's the High Life 50s or that,
yeah,
it still hasn't had that kind of, it's morphed, you know. Yeah, there were producers who were producing cassettes in the 80s and things, but it's still morphed. I mean, it hasn't, there's not that kind of a capitalist chokehold on it.
Yeah, okay.
It still is capitalism, but it does, you know, so you can, the independent movement, it's what is the norm, actually,
uh-huh.
on that side. No matter what smokes and mirrors people do with their labels, everybody creates their label with their team. I have a team. I have people who play different roles. So we are label in essence, but it doesn't mean that there is this extraordinary 100 million investor backing or, you know, like a Universal or any of these things. So those are the clear differences.
Okay.
I think creatively, we are on the precipice of, America is saturated. There's a lot of great music in America, but it's also saturated to the point where I think, as much as there's so much innovation and stuff, it doesn't always dominate the mainstream. Like if you were to tune into the radio in America, you would think that not so much great music is coming from
That's true.
But there is a lot of great music coming from America. I'm not saying it's so much different here, but I think because a lot of new innovations are allowed to blossom here, it's like anything can take over easily with much more ease. So I'm not glorifying one against the other because after all, nowhere cool. But there are those clear differences. And for an artist such as myself, who all I've always wanted was not to be an alternative to the mainstream, but to be an alternative in the mainstream.
Okay.
Being here provided a different foundation that made it possible. And the greatest irony about that is that opens more doors when I travel. Because the perception of me as a legitimate, the credibility I come with because of my notoriety and my whatever here is very different now.
Yeah.
I've been able to enter certain places that just my talent and my niche thing in America would not have done.
Okay. And that's kind of one of the other things I wanted to ask is because I found that a lot of the artists, well, there aren't that many, well, really, in terms of artists on the mainstream that are African in the U.S. So Wale, I know he has said before in interviews that he does feel his background may have kind of prevented him from going further and that he really, the few times he talks about being Nigerian or on his mixtapes. So do you think the hip hop industry in the U.S. would ever really, like, is ready to embrace an African MC on the mainstream stage?
It is not about the readiness of the U.S.
Okay.
It is about phenomena. You have to be a phenomenon. Yeah, it's about things that cannot be stopped.
Okay.
Now, I'm glad you brought up Kenan, because I don't think anybody could have told us that at that time, in which there wasn't even this flourishing Afrobeat movement, that somebody of sorts could have garnered that much attention in America and in that side of the world.
Yeah.
So it was just through sheer will and just the power of his story and his ability to tell a story.
Okay.
And his capability.
Yeah.
You know, which is the same thing that also kind of led to a certain compromise that he believes, like, let him street to it better, at least in his own words.
Yeah, so I read the article, the New York Times piece. Yeah.
So I think, not to deviate from the question, but I don't think that is the question, whether America is ready. I don't think an artist should look at it that way.
Okay. That's why I like talking to you. You're the intellectual MC. It's like, seriously, some artists is just, they don't know how to dive deep. They just kind of stay at the surface. So here, one of the things in terms of looking at hip hop in Africa, one of the things, Ghana has always been very unique in the sense that a lot of people mix styles. And so you may have an MC who does reggae stuff, you got the hip life, hip hop. And so it seems like for an MC such as yourself, who has managed to kind of come into this market as a lyricist and not kind of like go completely, you know.
Yeah.
So how do you feel? I mean, is it, have you sensed that kind of accomplishment? Have you been able to kind of like appreciate that in terms of you being an MC known for your lyricism and succeeding in a market that has predominantly seemed to favor more pop sounds?
I don't think I've succeeded yet. I think I've made incredible inroads.
Okay.
I mean, success will be pretty much turning things upside on its head, upside down to a certain degree. I've managed to break down some doors, and I think that's important because there's a legacy aspect to it, and there's the fact that there's a lot of other young artists that I meet who, I mean, when they were maybe in secondary school or just started university, and they were artists who were probably left-leaning in terms of their taste or what they wanted to create, that I was one of the few that could look at and say, well, he's doing this and it actually seems to be working, so maybe I feel empowered to actually, I can still do this. I don't have to go and do this one-way thing. So that I am, that gives me some sense of comfort that I am doing something that is just beyond me.
Okay.
So that's important because for myself, I've always, you know, the goalposts always shift. You at different times in your life, you want, now I feel I want to, aside from what I want to do in terms of creation, just being more of that cultural curator space and being able to do things that exceed just, you know, my bodies of work are more interesting to me. So yeah, I know, I mean, it's a tricky question about success, but I think I'd love to see myself and others make more contribution to the changing of the guard, to challenge the quality standards to a point where there's a lot of innovation, but sometimes the quality leaves a bit to be desired because we can do something dope, but we will not take it to the furthest extent. And what I want to represent is just like you're saying, like the unapologetic, okay, content, lyricism, things that it's clear that there's no pandering for, okay, using these same five buzzwords, sexy mama, turn around, wine, whatever thing. And then, but the ultimate way to let that work, to let it be the new wave or to let that wave flourish, it's almost like in America the Kendrick way or the Cole way, which is it has to succeed on that level to make people really the conversation change to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Otherwise it will always be like, it's cool but there are people in America, I feel like, or in the world, forget America, in Ghana, who will mention a Kendrick not because they actually spend time with that music, but they know that its effect, its dominance, its cool factor. It's something that they have to acknowledge or even pretend to know. Those are the kind of things that shift the status quo ultimately. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think that is the kind of thing I'm going for. So being able to be always in the conversation is great. Having money to change the conversation sometimes, to be honest, is great. But really dominating the conversation would be amazing.
Okay. So one of the things I remember saying to you before is, in terms of your listening to your music and some of your songs, you can listen to it and very much see the influence of African American culture. Mm-hmm. I think in one song you have a line, "Keep it stepping like a Kappa."
Yeah.
And one of the things that's been fun with teaching the hip hop in Africa class is we every year kind of you're one of the artists whose songs and lyrics they have to analyze. They almost have to translate the lyrics in terms of like, how would you rewrite this and what is the, you know, artist talking about. And one of the things that's with that, just that one line, only someone who had been in the States, in the African-American community, would even know what that significance of that line was. And so do you feel like that kind of comfort with African-American culture and being able to kind of switch back and forth, is that still influencing your music today?
Yeah, but I think in a different way.
Okay.
No, this is very powerful in terms of the skill or your capability as a creator. So yeah, I mean, the more I know.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, so with the relationship between sort of the Black diaspora, I think knowledge of both sides, if that's what we want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Or now it's even a more three sides. It's sort of, if you go to London, like the Ghanaian British, it's a whole different ball game. It's a different diaspora than the African-American diaspora
is.
So who are now identifying as Ghanaian, Stormzy and all these people. But being able to, I think, have to see through that perspective or have that understanding, I think probably does help in terms of being able to be a bit more skilled about selling things. But some of it is subconscious, I think.
Okay.
Because it comes from how I actually interact with people. Like when I go to London, how I build with people. You know, it's not this like, yo, let's go and do shopping. Because I've been in studio sessions with people in London and we've been there for 5 hours building, not recording, just talking. I remember speaking with Akala in the UK and we're just there talking. But just being able to, I think, yeah, so it does still inform me. Maybe in a different way, because my primary, which is Africa, not Ghana, my primary people I'm communicating to the most immediate are around here. So you might find me using maybe more cheap programs or whatever kind of thing, because I'm in the business of communication. So there's some immediacy that I need in terms of being able to reach people, letting them hit them.
Yeah.
Recently I released a song, it's less than a month old. When I'm walking around town, you know a song is working out, not because of radio, but when you're walking around town, people meet you and there are certain things that most of them are saying about the song, like certain lines. So the line I say in the song is a song called Fuses, which is like, if you know your work, you won't be afraid of the white man. You see, there's a thing here in which there's an intimidation factor of a foreigner being a person more capable because of how education is. The number is down to our mind. So when I say that line, it's resonated. I've seen a couple of reaction videos from people in Canada. I posted one from some young ladies in Canada who have Ghanaian origin, and they picked that out. And the other people, you know, so it's like, that's when you know that, okay, it's working across different ways, but it's now coming from here out.
Okay.
So it's maybe that's the difference. I'm not speaking about us, I'm speaking to us more.
Okay, I see that. And so I think also one of the things as distinguishes you as an artist, one, you have all these experiences, and so very few artists can kind of switch like literally any mode you want to be in. But it's also kind of a way you have found a way, or I guess it's natural, to be an intellectual MC and it not be preachy or boring or label conscious rap, which is for a certain type of people. So you've kind of brought to this mainstream music where, yeah, you can jam to it, but if you listen to it closely, you also can get these messages. And so that's one of the things I found that's really, really incredible with your work. And so in terms of collaborating with other artists, you've also done a lot of collaborations, but I mean, since you've been back in Ghana, with artists outside of Ghana. And so do you feel like kind of having that experience has kind of made it easier for you to kind of reach out and make these connections? Is it just kind of natural for you to say, hey, you know, this MC over here in South Africa or where have you, let me try to form some kind of linkages and do a collaboration?
I've only worked with people who admire my work, actually, to be terribly honest.
Okay.
And I think that only comes because the identity of my music and how I present myself has been strong. So they have an appreciation of it. So it's been that kind of the strength. Let my magic meet your magic. Let's make music. And also having this need to not sit still here.
Yeah.
And what do you call it? And float in any kind of local glory or whatever kind of thing, which is so fleeting, you know?
Yeah. But you're not, I'm sure you're not going to do collaboration with anybody who has an appreciation for
you. No. not at all, but I am a bit more open-minded about unlikely collaborations now.
You know,
I've released songs this year, which when I've said, oh, this I'm about to release this, people are like, I don't know how this is going to sound like, though. Mm. But when it comes out, they're like, oh, it makes sense. You know, so there are some that seem more natural fits, but I think I'm much more open to unlikely collaboration. Depending on the song, it could, I could see somebody who we might not have as much fans crossing, you know, that Venn diagram in the middle there, but we could do something powerful together. And I'm not the first to do that. I think there's so many people like that. I used to love Dep Press, still do. And I think Dep Press used to do those unlikely collaborations.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, Jay-Z at the time, who's always been smart about it, is on some Dep Press remix. Then you have them with Soulja Slim. And I think the mark of sometimes having a strong identity is not to remain in that little cocoon, but it's to be able to see how unlikely collaborations could make something bigger happen. So I've been able to do that. I've been fortunate enough to have artists who I dig also dig me, so it's made it easier to do that. And it's never, for my collaborations since I've been here, I've never been about how famous or how reputable the person is in terms of numbers. It's in terms of just talent. So I've also out here in Ghana, I'm quite known for working with people that are relative unknowns. And then a year or two later, I become, so I'm cool with that, because the aim is seen beyond just some mathematical calculation of what the collaboration looks like, but what impact it could have.
Didn't you do a collaboration with Double HP?
Yes, I did, man, rest his soul. I did, and he was a good guy. He was good, super. I mean, one of the most generous Pan-African, like, love for, like, just either, you know, South Africans can tend to be, like, very South African. Just like Nigerians can be, too. But partly because they are two, you know, they are two powerhouses in Africa. But he was very kind. He was dope. I mean, and it's a tragic loss, but I appreciate, and I'm appreciative of the time that I got to meet him and create with him, and the impact of what we did together. Like, recently I even saw some guys from LA reacted to the video of him and I, you know.
That was a good video. All right, so you released Nowhere Cool, it was 2 years ago. Okay, and so you're working on another project now. Can you say anything about what you're working on now?
Well, there's two projects. One is a collaborative album. Another one is just my next solo. Okay. My next solo is called GMT, Ghana Man Time. Or maybe Ghana Mean Time. Or maybe some other meanings. And then I'm working on a collaborative project with a young artist at Dickok Wallasi. I mean, we work very well together, so okay. We're working on so both of these are close okay. to completion. I mean, my calculations are different now. I think I release albums based on a timing perspective. I create based on an ideas perspective, but mm-hmm. I release them based on a timing perspective to have the impact, the desired impact, like I was talking about, to really have the desired impact. So I initially intended on releasing both albums this year, but I don't think creatively it's been finished, and I also don't think the timing was... I need to release singles to rev up the interest to a certain degree. And these are different, you know, I mean, I guess I'm opening the curtain, or we're seeing behind the curtain a little bit, but I think it's important that people mm-hmm. know that if you make music with a purpose, it requires a little bit of strategy to let it reach that purpose. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it can fall flat. And nothing worse than the trajectory not going up and up, but it plateauing before its time.
Yeah, well, definitely, whatever you're doing and whatever you've been doing is working. I was talking to your manager and telling him how when an artist has kind of leveled up when by the number of layers you have to go through to get to them, because I'm like, okay, that email, whatever, on your Twitter or wherever it is, I'm like, okay. The old addresses don't work, old phone numbers are cut off, and so it's like, okay. So that's why I'm like, all right. So it's working.
I mean, the thing that I'm excited about now, and the level of, it's not because none of these things work, it's because actually, like, so much is happening. Like, so today, like, I'm doing that thing for a live score with an artist from Zimbabwe that's coming. Just being able to do all these things requires sometimes just disconnecting, so.
Yeah. Yeah. The bigger your fan base becomes, it can also become dangerous, honestly. I mean, in terms of celebrities, I don't think African artists have had to deal with some of the stuff that U.S. artists have had to deal with in terms of, like I just said, in terms of people seem to move more freely. Celebrities seem to move more freely, whereas in the States, you're always hearing about so-and-so's house or so-and-so's stalker or what have you. I definitely can recognize the fact that, yeah. Okay, so then your projects, not this year, then early next year.
Early next year for sure.
Okay, next year.
Early, we'll see. Okay. I'm hoping the first half of the year.
Okay.
It would be, strategically, I think it would be amazing the first part of the year. It would set the tone for another thing. Because I needed to also go out, because I began working on what might be my last album before I began working on these two albums.
Okay.
And I stopped because I felt these two albums needed to happen.
Okay.
Before that ultimate album, at least that album which I'm still making music as my primary living, needed to happen, at least in my mind.
Okay. And so when are you coming to the States?
Probably January.
Really?
Potentially, yeah.
To perform or just to visit?
No, a lot of times when I'm in America now, it's funny, it's either one or two business things that are not necessarily on stage performing.
Okay.
Being able to meet certain people in industry wise.
Okay.
And then just pull some strings so that when to lubricate the business side of the thing.
Okay.
I mean, so that when I do gigs and other things, then there's a much more cohesive and
mm-hmm.
whatever thing that with support, with backing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So,
well, I definitely think you should come back and do a performance.
Yeah, no, definitely, Charlie. I want to come do a proper tour in America, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a college tour would be wicked, you know.
Hey, I think that would be Howard amazing. University.
Yeah, you know, Charlie. old people.
See, like, you know, all these big schools, they get these artists to come through, and I'm like, man. In fact, interestingly, Double HP was supposed to come to Howard, and, you know, some things happened. He was in town. He was driving, because I teach that class on hip-hop in Africa. He was supposed to come speak, and ended up, you know, traffic coming from New York and wasn't able to come.
Okay.
But, yeah, so it's like whenever, you know, we're always trying our best.
Yeah, I've done one or two artist residencies. I did one in St. Lawrence.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so those I like those because I think going beyond one layer of experience and mm-hmm. sharing beyond that is cool.
And we need more artists coming to Black colleges.
Yeah, definitely.
And the campus will be very happy.
Hey, man, tell the people them that you know I'm ready and willing.
Okay. All right. Well, I know you're, because Hire, I could, you know, tell you've been busy all day, so I'm not going to keep you.
Small, yeah. Nah.
But thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, too. Thank you. It's good to speak to you again. Good to see that you are keeping on the mission.
Yeah, man.
You know, because this part of the work is important, too.
Yeah,
otherwise, you're just telling the stories.
Exactly. And who would have thought I could, like, you know, get promotion and all that shit?
Yeah.
writing about hip hop. Yeah. Even now, in African Studies departments, yeah, it's like hip hop. You know, when I presented at the UG, it was just kind of like, okay. You know, so it's been great. All right, well, thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm losing my win. When two play that game and only one win, then it must be a sin. No woman to cry, I'll be willing to try. You're my day or nah or nah. Lose myself so I can find you. What defines you? I won't label you or sign you. Exchange no be robbery, we must. I remind you. TikTok, see the way this man time you.
On the go, on the car, chop money to make a drop for night.